today is basically a call from the industry for help from everyone that's sitting in this room, everyone at all aspects of the supply chain, with regards to the concerns that we have. We do have a problem with contamination, and we have a panel discussion for you today with representatives from the industry, maybe some folks that you haven't heard from before that are going to give you their perspective and their concerns on this situation. We have strong efforts underway. We've heard time and again that the efforts with the Cotton Council, the initiatives, the Keep It Clean programs, the communication, the education efforts that we are making. One of the challenges that I have had is that I tend to interact more closely with international mills. So when traditionally I have come back and indicated that the international mills are complaining about contamination, the first challenging question I've often gotten is, well, how do I know that it's really U.S. cotton? How do we know that we do have a problem here in the U.S.? There's been a growing amount of information, in particular in this past year, that I think has demonstrated quite clearly that it is indeed also a problem in the U.S. The Cotton Council does gather information. We ask that the mills provide input on what they are seeing and the types of contamination. We are seeing an increase in number of complaints and reports. But further to that, it's telling when our own U.S. industry representatives are reaching out to us for help. We had a communication from Barnhart Manufacturing, of which we have a panel member here today, reaching out to the industry to explain that the impact that contamination in U.S. cotton was having on their business and how we needed to find a way to help them to proceed with their business practices. In addition to that, we've heard about the issues in classing and the letter that went out to the generals with regards to the amount of contamination that was being seen in this year's classing samples. And I do want to take a moment to indicate that often we tend to focus just on a particular color and a particular concern with round modules. However, it's not just yellow plastics. Many of the classing samples were not yellow plastics. There were black plastics. There were green plastics. Frightfully, the things that become even harder and harder to see. The sample on the one side there is white plastic, which unless we have that laser or static detection system, there's no way we're going to find that to remove that from the cotton string. There is a need for research in this area, and I hope that the communications today will indicate that we're asking for your assistance. We're asking for your help in this area because, unfortunately, that plastic will end up in somebody's product. And the worst thing that can happen to U.S. cotton is the fact that the textile industry no longer can successfully sell cotton products because of the defects that is present in that cotton raw material. So we need to have some efforts underway to keep those customers happy so they still have a reason to prefer U.S. cotton over other countries' growth. And I spent all the time that I intend to spend talking today. The intention of today is to have the panel members present information to you, and I have to rely on my computer technology to pull up information so I can properly introduce them. And I do want to spend a few moments telling you a little bit about the folks that are going to be talking to you today, since you have not necessarily interacted with them before. First with us today is Tom Robinson from Barnhart Manufacturing Company. Tom is a third-year generation textile with over 33 years' experience in the industry. He's currently the Director of Operations and Product Development of the Natural Fibers Division of Barnhart Manufacturing Company. If you don't know, Barnhart Manufacturing is the largest manufacturer of purified cotton and is headquartered in Charlotte, North Carolina. They have been family-owned since 1900. Tom has worked with Burlington Industries, serving numerous leadership roles, including Executive Vice President of Manufacturing and Operations and Planning. He's had oversight of multi-plant operations throughout the U.S., China, Mexico, India, Vietnam, and Nicaragua. When ITG purchased Burlington Industries and positioned itself alongside Cone Mills, Tom had the opportunity to become Vice President of Operations and Customer Support at Cone, where he's responsible for their global denim operations and planning. Tom was then recruited by NAT Kralar, a producer of natural bast fibers, where he ultimately then accepted a position where he currently is with Barnhart Manufacturing. And at this point, I'd like to introduce Tom to the podium to share with you the issues and concerns that Barnhart has had with regards to contamination issues.
Speaking is not my normal thing, so I am Director of Operations and Product Development for Barnhart Manufacturing. I'll try to keep the commercial about Barnhart as small as I can, but I would like to share with you a little bit about our history, the opportunity that we see for cotton, and kind of a challenge that we have for the industry as a whole to reap that opportunity. Barnhart Manufacturing is a 118-year-old family-owned operation. We have 8 manufacturing facilities and distribution sites in the United States. The essence of our company is rooted in cotton. We started out in 1900 making cotton batting for horse collars, buggies, and comforters. And obviously, you know, we've evolved over the years. As the automotive industry developed, we made batting for those vehicles. As the furniture industry moved south, we made batting for that. In the 1920s, we built our first purification platform, and we started supplying Johnson & Johnson with purified cotton that went into a number of medical devices, bandages, and things of that nature. As one of the leaders in purified cotton since the 1920s, we've evolved not only in medical and dental products, we also service the pharmaceutical industry. So we started, you know, making the coil, that little annoying cotton ball that's in your medicine bottles. There's a high probability that that's a Barnhart product. We are currently the only manufacturer of pharmaceutical coil in the United States. We service companies like Pfizer, Bristol Myers Squibb, Bayer, New Chapter, and 600 other companies globally. We distribute dental to the dental industry in 40 different countries. We also do a lot of single-use disposables for spa, salon, and things of that nature throughout Europe and the United States. We are the largest manufacturer of purified cotton in the world. Our 2 sites are located. One is in Charlotte, North Carolina. The other one's in Coleraine, Massachusetts. We use U.S. cotton, and we remove the oils and waxes to make an absorbent and whitened product with peroxide. We ship these bales, as I mentioned, all around the world. We know that there's at least 50 other competitors globally. Barnhart maintains its market-leading position based on the quality of the product that we provide. We provide purified cotton for things like Q-tips, cotton balls, tampons. They find their ways to the shelves of Walmart, Target, Walgreens, CVS. We've been providing this product for many years. Almost 5 years ago, we had a challenge issued to us to enter the purified cotton into hygiene products. At that time, and even today, most panty liners, diapers, incontinence pads, top sheets, and things of that nature, they're made with extruded films or synthetic structures. Most consumers of those products, though, think that they're buying cotton products because they're white. There's not a requirement for transparency in terms of the fiber type, and that's one of the things that, you know, we've been pushing for is, you know, an advocate for transparency and fibers that go into those substrates. In 2012, we developed a hydrophobic cotton. We call it Hydra, and that helps fill that need for that hygiene market. Another driving factor trying to pull people to cotton in those categories, you know, has been the interest of sustainability. It's clear that municipalities recognize that in hygiene products alone, just the sheer volume of these products that are going to the landfills that will be there for hundreds of years. Our obviously our product is biodegradable, sustainable. So, you know, we see the size of the opportunity as enormous. in the hygiene category. It's continuing to grow as there are improved hygiene practices within developing countries. The size of the global population continues to grow. In 2018, it's estimated that 24 billion pounds of raw material be used in this category alone, with estimates, by the year 2024, it could grow to 44 billion pounds of raw material. Today, cotton represents only a very small fraction of that total, between 1% to 5%. We see the opportunities tremendous. The global customers are looking for more natural products to the skin, cotton. They're looking for sustainable products, cotton. They're looking for biodegradable products, cotton. Additionally, there's an interest from consumers for more transparency in their hygiene products that will benefit cotton because people believe that they're currently buying cotton. Now, the reason I'm standing here today, though, is to tell you I've been trying to, I'm director of operations and product development for one of the largest manufacturers of purified cotton. We're trying to enter these markets with cotton. One of the greatest things that we're running into and that we're asking for the help from the U.S. cotton community is, we have issues with foreign extraneous matter contamination. It doesn't matter whether it's the black ground cover, yellow or pink module cover, or the polypropylene rope. All of them have found their way into our stream and at significant levels. So, we deal with, final consumer products. So you can kind of imagine, if you had a daughter, a wife, and they're opening a tampon product and they've got yellow plastic, and I've got photographs and examples. The same thing happens. You have a diaper or a feminine pad or whatnot, and they open it up. These things get 100% inspected. we can only inspect a fraction of it, but ultimately they get 100% inspected, and you'll see, trace elements of the black plastic and things of that nature. So, in 2017, the Barnhart's received complaints from Europe to Asia, throughout the United States, and hygiene, medical, and consumer products. We are continuing to invest in the technologies that were mentioned. We've had vision for a number of years. We are continuing to try to deploy different technologies to detect it. At this point, the removal rates of 85% or less are very common through our supply stream. So at our very best, there's still a percentage of contaminant that gets through. The other thing that I want to kind of mention is that I'm not really here to talk about cotton as opposed to cotton and other forms of the world. The fight that I have every day is sustaining cotton's market share in existing products that could have, when you deal with social media, all you need is one tampon with yellow plastic or something like that to make a page and it makes headlines. When these major brands and everything assess the risks of today's social media with it relates to quality, it's not cotton to cotton. It's cotton to other man-made fibers. The one that I compete with primarily is rayon. So, we see a wonderful opportunity for cotton, a wonderful growth opportunity for cotton, but as an industry, we've got to make major strides in reducing the risk of that foreign contamination. I can deal with dirt, I can deal with metal. At this point, I really can't deal with plastic. I think that's it. Thank you.
Thank you. And I should have explained first, the format of this is each of these gentlemen are going to have about 10 minutes to share their views, and then hopefully we'll have time for interaction with the audience with various questions for each of the panel members. Next, I'm going to introduce David Sasso. David is Vice President of Sales and Marketing of Bueller Yarns, a manufacturer of higher value yarns that relies on strong relationships across the supply chain and retail to increase the value by communication from the fiber forward. The foundation is based on the belief that knowledgeable, educated supply chain from designer to buyer, textile processing through retail is what brings maximum value to the consumer. David would say it is who we know and what we know which makes the team at Bueller Yarns one of the most knowledgeable in the industry. David's involvement with trade associations such as American Apparel Producers Network, Cotton Council International, and the National Association of Sewn Products Industry provides the opportunity for networking with the best supply chains. And in addition, the boards that he serves on gives him the opportunity to hear the concerns directly from the brands and retailers. Prior to joining Bueller, David's experience has been in industrial engineering and yarn spinning facilities. He has expertise in manufacturing of yarns, woven and knitted fabrics, giving him a wide foundation for what is needed to make quality products. The question is, are the samples random or are we seeing it more prevalent in one place versus another?
It's pretty random. I mean, we're seeing it in every office. It'll vary, like I said. Some offices might have double digits. Some offices might have triple digits. You know, what we were really hoping, quite frankly, is that when we first started seeing it show up a lot this year, we were hoping it was going to be isolated to two or three locations. And that can be solved and stopped pretty quickly. But it quickly kind of became aware that it was in every region, in every office. Now, not every gin has it, but every location, every office where we class does.
That's the data that we've been requesting, actually. And as mentioned, you know, in terms of, we call it gen direct purchases or whatever, but you know, we're looking for where can we go where we won't have issues with contamination. There's certain product categories we just cannot afford the exposure.
Yes.
David, you did a great job. I see why you're in sales. This isn't about plastic, but I do look for understanding. You talked about, people talk to you about where you got your cotton at, whether it was sustainable or sourcing and everything. And my question is, do you get the same question on where you get your rayon or your polyester or your Tencel?
Most definitely.
Really?
Yeah, most definitely. They want to know everything that we do. They want to know what comes in, what comes out, what is the percentage loss. And you know, it is a value to us. Listen, the retail relationship is something so valuable that you have to be transparent with them because if something goes wrong.
But my question is,
maybe come up to the mic.
Themselves are not sustainable, or what we would call natural, as it were. I'm trying to get my head around that.
Right. We buy also Tencel and Modal, but we only buy it from one source. That's a good thing to say. We know where fibers come from. Now, in Asia, they have different varieties of rayons and suppliers. Of course, I can say, you don't know where it comes from. With me, you do. That's a good selling point, right? You want to know the consistency of your product, how it gets there, you know the source of fiber. You know, and I do a lot of education to the retailers so that they can ask the right questions. Because if the more they know and the more they come back to me, says, explain to me this, I am the top guy. All right? So for me, it's my form of marketing and sales. Right. Yeah, the garment is what we compete with. There's so many variations of this. I just chose one. Fabric weight is extremely important. What you put on a fabric and you use labor to that lowers the cost of fiber. But the question is can I make the right decisions to improve the consumer experience? And that's what retailers are wanting. I don't know of any customers that says, oh, the quality is better today than ever. Wrong. Sewing quality is better today than ever. Fabric quality is one of the poorest. So that is a fiber relationship. That is a spinning relationship. That is a know-how relationship. So I'm trying to put us ahead of the game, since we are the leaders in sustainability and quality. And you guys are on the forefront. You determine the quality from whatever perspective you want to look at.
The other thing that I was hoping to try to convey in the time that I had with the group was... Yeah, the thing that I was trying to convey in the time that I had with the group was not really cotton opposed to other cottons within the region. I was trying to convey the opportunity that exists in this world of non-wovens. It's tremendous. And you're only a very small fraction. We are only a very small fraction of the total fiber consumed in that market. And in order to penetrate that market, we've got to do substantially better within the supply chain on this issue of contamination, because those products are synthetic today for a reason. And yeah, just wanted to kind of throw that out there. And then there are some, like I said, you know, we've been making fiber for tampons for years. In 2011, when prices for cotton went astronomical, you know, brands started looking for ways to mitigate their price exposure. So they began to experiment with other fibers, and rayon offered an alternative for a lot of the properties, absorbency, and things of that nature. And you know, so they made an inroad there. So now there are products that are 100% rayon to 100% cotton, and kind of anywhere in between. Whenever we have issues with regards to contamination, I am in a struggle for my life to try to keep those programs cotton. I just said, in terms of this one customer category, I know I'm having 30% reworks, rejects from that standpoint. I know for Barnhart Manufacturing, we've suffered at least seven digits in terms of losses this year that I really can't put back. They're ours. The way that our technology runs and the way that we consume bales, you know, we'll run, you know, we may have 10, 20 gins, 100 bales being consumed at any one point in time. And the way these top feeders run, there's enough air turbulence and whatnot that the fragments are, you know, they're being sucked up. It's very difficult to find them actually in the laydown. We are looking at deployment of, you know, strategically where we put vision to try to potentially not have the bales fully fed before we, you know, we know that we're going to have a number of hits. But, you know, as far as economic impact, and that's the reason why I said, you know, we have been asking, you know, what regions are having a lower number of hits, so that we could look regionally to, you know, where do we source our cotton? You know, I know that there's a question with regards to economics, and, you know, within my organization, I'm not the one that buys the cotton, but I know I'm the one that has to produce the products, and, you know, I definitely know that there's a delta for us in terms of what we're experiencing as actual losses versus, you know, if there were opportunities for sources that were free of that there could be a delta for us. But it's a big number.
In my scenario there, I chose one fabric, and if I had 1% reject due to contamination, it's worth 6 cents a pound. Because the garment is $3.90 or a unit, right? And it only consumes, you know, a half a pound of yarn. But that changes with fabric weight, right? And the garment, the final garment costs. Right? So if you notice, if you do look at my spreadsheet there, I added one more thing that's quite important. If you had that 1% loss, it translates to so many acres that just went to waste. if you had that 6% loss, it translates into so many acres that just went to waste. That's your biggest cost. Energy, people, that's your biggest cost.
Well, Tommy, I'm going to give you the last question because we're right at 3 o'clock, so one more question.
I don't have the answers, but I do know what some of the problems are. Well, definitely, anything we can do that's at the field, and even long before round bale modules come into effect, there was things that was getting into the cotton, the bale twine that Greg or somebody showed earlier. That's a problem. We were even using this nylon synthetic material to help hold the tarps down. Didn't have to do that. We didn't need to be doing that. That's an education process. So that's two. I think mainly the round bale, though, that's going to be we've got to do, as a producer, we've got to do what we can to not have miswraps, okay? So that's one of the first steps. We've got to do what we can to make sure that bale is put in the right place. I don't have a round bale module, but I've got neighbors that do. Make sure that it's not on shredded stalks, because those shredded stalks are little old bitty like points that when they poke that plastic goes up into that cotton, and therefore it's a contaminant, it's a potential. So, little things like that to not do. When it gets to the gin yard, making sure that, whenever that guy is out there, if it's a machine that's doing it, there's different, I won't get into that, there's a lot of different machines. But the manpower involved behind it, there needs to be cameras there, and we need to be watching that. And that's where I've had talks with the gin. I'm in a co-op gin. It's not an independent, it's a co-op, so therefore we all are in it together. And I just said, look, as our manager, he's really good, but I said, we have to have cameras. We got to be holding those workers accountable. And if they're not doing what they're supposed to be, they need to be gone. I mean, we have to, because it's going to cost us. I think those are some of the main points that we've got to do to make sure that we're all doing our part, because it's real easy when it showed that feeder there, if it's contaminated. Now think about it. You got guys behind you that don't even have round bale machines. They got regular old-fashioned modules. Now they're getting contaminated. They're going to be pretty mad, and I'm not saying they're going to be. They are. We've already had some of that. So, it's just we just got to all work together, but those are just a few things that I think starts that process of thinking. And then Greg and them, what they talked about, all the different things that are in the pipeline for, with possibly that can, from the smart gurus that can figure out, I think you said Matt or somebody that knew so much a while ago, but, those guys that can figure out that stuff that maybe can help get this out. But we've got to do what we can on the front end. So I don't know. That's some of the things. Yeah.
All right, well, I'm going to conclude the panel discussion. If you would, please, everyone, thank our panel for their participation today.